So, a bottomless pit beset by corruption. That's the damning verdict on Northern Ireland by the writer and broadcaster Matthew Paris. Writing in The Times, the former Conservative MP says the idea of a united Ireland makes so much sense. What do you think at home this morning? 0303 80 55 55. Matthew joins me now. Good morning to you.
Morning.
You've said it costs taxpayers more to keep Northern Ireland in the Union than the UK will get back from leaving the EU. Surely this is it's about more than just money.
Yes, it's about more than just money, but it's sometimes worth pointing out to people, especially some of the Brexiteers in England and Scotland and Wales, worth pointing out to them that we actually pay more subsidy, as it were, into Northern Ireland than we do into the European Union. It's about the same. It's depending how you estimate it, something between 10 and 14 billion pounds a year.
So what's your point to them? To get rid of us? To chop off Northern Ireland and to change the UK?
No, that would be a choice for the people of Northern Ireland. And the argument that I'm trying to make is that I think that it makes a lot of sense. I don't think the British government should try to persuade the people of Northern Ireland to vote for unification. I think they should stand back from the process and leave it to the electorate.
OK, so set out your argument why you believe that a united Ireland makes so much sense.
Well, the border where it is doesn't really make an awful lot of sense and isn't going to make much difference soon, because it will continue to be invisible. And the border for customs and that kind of thing with the United Kingdom will be down the Irish Sea. That's been agreed by Boris Johnson. So that, in a sense, already pushes the two slightly closer together. And in many ways...
Surely did Boris Johnson not say that that border would not make any difference, that border down the Irish Sea?
I don't think he was telling the truth.
Is this better, in your opinion, for the people of Northern Ireland or the people of England, the rest of the UK?
Well, I'm an Englishman, so I have to be a bit hesitant about me saying what's better for people, but I think it would be better for the people, both of Northern Ireland and Southern Ireland and the Republic. Whether better for the people of the United Kingdom or not, I don't know. I think opinion would be quite divided in Britain. There are a lot of unionists on this side of the water, but there are also quite a lot of people who would, I think, say if the Northern Irish wish to join the South, then let them do it.
Some will find it difficult to swallow this from you. You mentioned yourself, you're an Englishman, but when you describe Northern Ireland as a bottomless pit beset by corruption, and then try to suggest that we would be better off as a united Ireland, some will have issue with that, Matthew.
I'm sure some people will, but I think there is a problem, and it goes for every kind of aid, including foreign aid, where you funnel money into politicians and governments, it very often doesn't reach the people that it's supposed to be reaching. And I don't want to, and probably not capable of, reeling off a list of projects in Northern Ireland that have gone wrong, where the money appears to have disappeared. But I hope you would accept that, at least in the news as we read it in the rest of the United Kingdom, a lot does seem to have gone wrong with some of the subsidies that have been paid.
Well, it's not for me to accept or not accept that, Matthew, but we were talking about generating more money within Northern Ireland on this very programme yesterday. People were talking about being more self-sufficient. But could that ever happen? Is that, given the history of Northern Ireland, is that our responsibility to try and be self-sufficient?
I'm not sure that balancing the books in a strict arithmetical kind of way is particularly useful, but certainly you will remember, or some of our older listeners will remember, that the Republic used to be a great deal poorer than Northern Ireland and appears to have pulled themselves up, at least in part, by their own bootstraps. And I see no reason why the same couldn't happen north of the border.
I still am not completely sure, in terms of your argument, where the incentive is for people in Northern Ireland to want this, especially if they are unionists.
Well, polling in the, at least I cited in the newspaper article, Lord Ashcroft's poll, suggested that even amongst unionists, 1 in 10 were saying they were either not sure how they would vote in a referendum, or that they would actually vote for unification. And as you go down the age scale, you find the younger people are, the more open they are to the idea. So I think it's partly a generational thing.
So you're referring to former unionists then?
Yes. Well, I suppose so. I mean, can you call yourself a unionist and believe in unification with the South? I don't know. That's a matter of vocabulary.
Northern Ireland infrastructure, for example, like our water service, it suffers from historic underinvestment. So our health service is in crisis. Northern Ireland, I think many would agree, needs investment to thrive. Surely that is where some of that money is going, and that's why we need that support from Westminster.
Yes, certainly. Northern Ireland is one of the poorer regions of the United Kingdom, as is Wales, for instance, which also enjoys quite a lot of
subsidies. North England, you mentioned the $12 billion annual subsidy to Northern Ireland,
yes.
And say we cost the British taxpayers more than the UK's net payments to the EU, but the government is about to pour billions into the north of England.
Well, I hope so. I'm not quite sure where it will all go. I wait to see what the government's plans are. But I'm certainly not saying that the poorer parts of a country will not be subsidised, should not be subsidised by the richer parts, simply, but it does all seem to go in one direction in Northern Ireland, and it doesn't seem to have been working because the South has steadily got richer and the North has not got richer, so something must be wrong.
What do you mean by get richer? Again, we talk about the underinvestment in Northern Ireland and the perhaps inability to be self-sufficient. So how do you get richer when so much more money is needed to get us up to the same level as the rest of the UK? You mentioned and accepted as well that we are a poorer region than other areas of the UK.
Well, you channel a certain amount of money from the richer parts to the poorer part, and that is being done. You speak about underinvestment in Northern Ireland, and you can speak with more authority than I can on the adequacy of the health service or the water services, but you have to accept that very, very large sums of money do continuously go in that direction.
The Taoiseach, Leo Varadkar, and other leading Irish politicians, they have said consistently that now is not the time to be pushing for a border poll. Why do you know?
I agree with that. Yeah, no, I agree with that. I don't think now is the time to be pushing.
So when is the time?
I would think some years ahead, you know, 4, 5, 6 years ahead. I think it will happen within the next 10 years. It would certainly be foolish for those who want unification to push for a border poll now, because the border poll might well not succeed in their aims, in which case they would then have to wait another 7 years. So I don't think anyone's going to be calling for a border poll until the opinion polling is quite clear in the north.
You're a former Conservative MP, so I'm wondering, do you have an insight into the current thinking of the government? Is this really the government's strategy for Northern Ireland to move and push it towards reunification?
No, I absolutely don't have any such insight. And to the extent that I am in tune or understand the thinking of senior Conservatives, I don't think this is something they're thinking about or talking about at all.
But you must have some kind of insight. So is there an increasing kind of talk or chatter in Westminster and those political circles about Irish unity?
No, there isn't. I haven't heard increasing talk or chatter about Irish unity, and I don't think it's an issue. I don't think it's actually on the horizon at the moment, this side of the water. I was simply flying my own kite. I think it's something that is going to happen, and I think that it could work quite well, and I'm talking about it, I think, before other people are talking about it, but I think in due course they will.
03030 80 55 55. You live here, you are listening this morning. Is this something that you maybe agree with Matthew Paris on? 81771 on the text. Also on the line we have Jamie Bryson, the Loyalist commentator. Good morning to you, Jamie.
Good morning.
Well, I know you wrote a blog responding, I guess, to an extent to Matthew's article. How do you feel as a unionist when you hear a former MP, a member of the UK government, former, who would be happy to cast you a unionist aside?
Well, I think that, as I wrote in my piece last night, I think the article is offensive. From what I've heard this morning, I don't think Matthew makes any other argument other than an economic argument in relation to this, which is in of itself a little bit loopy and doesn't seem to have been fleshed out. But I think, you know, the notion that you would say to citizens, unionists, people like myself, that are citizens in Northern Ireland, and treat us as if we aren't, equal British citizens within the United Kingdom and should somehow be shunted off into United Ireland and out of the United Kingdom, I think is just totally offensive, especially coming from somebody who, I don't know if he's still a member of the Conservative and Unionist Party or not.
But well, you can talk directly to him. Matthew's on the line.
Yeah, well, obviously at one point was, but you made the point yourself, and I think last night I used the example of Manchester, Newcastle, Liverpool, some poorer parts of England. And if those places need to have significant investment, should those British citizens also be shunted off into the arms and of a foreign state? Because that's exactly what he is advocating to the people.
Is that a similar comparison, really?
Well, yes, it is, because we are entitled to equal citizenship. So I am no less a British citizen than somebody living in Manchester or London or Newcastle or anywhere else. And this is the problem with the Belfast Agreement. It created this notion that people within Northern Ireland were a little bit less British, and we absolutely are not. And I think what Matthew articulates is just a development of what I call the process, which is to incrementally ease Northern Ireland out of the United Kingdom and into United Ireland little by little by conditioning minds.
Let Matthew respond to that, because there's many that will agree with what Jimmy Bryson is saying there, Matthew Parris, and there are many that will feel that this is just another way of trying to ease and slip Northern Ireland out of the UK.
Yes, I've been reading what Jimmy Bryson has been writing, and I see that he is opposed to the Belfast Agreement, the Good Friday Agreement, and sees it as a process to get rid of Northern Ireland. I don't think that was the intention. I think that the terms had to be agreed by both sides, and it seemed reasonable to both sides that if the people of Northern Ireland, by a clear majority, wanted to leave, then they would be able to do so.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about shunting anybody off. And as for citizenship, this is not the right forum to negotiate the terms of reunification of Ireland, but I would have thought that part of any such negotiation would have to be continuing perpetual rights of British citizenship to those north of the border who chose to take them.
I know you're tight for time, Matthew, but just to respond to Jamie's other point regarding this being a simply economic argument, and that there are other areas of even within England that are also, you could call, a drain on the rest of the UK, you know, and the argument is not being made to separate them off.
No one is trying to separate any parts of the United Kingdom off, but if some parts wanted to go, then I think the voice of the people should be heard. And it's not just an economic argument, that there is such a thing as an all-Ireland consciousness on the island of Ireland. Not everybody shares it, but many people do. And I just don't want to talk in terms of the language of partition and the language of the Protestant community and the Republican community and all the rest. There is a new consciousness, I think, that is beginning to dawn. If it doesn't happen, then reunification won't happen. But I think it is happening, and I think especially a lot of younger listeners to this programme might recognise that.
You said, Matthew, that meshing North and South together will be painful, but it can be done. What do you mean by painful?
Well, it'll be painful economically at first. And so I think that the United Kingdom government should remain willing to help in that respect. The European Union, of course, if reunification happened, Northern Ireland would be in the European Union and eligible for regional funds as they are at the moment. So, and there would be, I'm sure, elements in the unionist community who would be very angry at the idea, as there have always been elements in the Republican community who are angry at the idea of partition. But I honestly think the way history is moving is away from all that, however gradually.
Jamie Bryson?
Yeah, well, if I pick up that you say Matthew's tight for time, so if I could just come back quickly on one point to put it to him, in that he seemed to indicate that the Belfast Agreement is not a process. And just very simply, Matthew, I would put to you, a process, by its very dictionary definition, has a beginning and an end. Could you outline for me where the end of the process is?
Well, the end of the process is where the people, by a majority of Northern Ireland, wanted to end. And so if they wanted to end with Northern Ireland always remaining part of the United Kingdom, that is within their power.
Sorry, could you tell me what the only end envisaged in the Northern Ireland Act is?
Well, I don't think there is an end. The
end
is the end of violence.
No, sorry, Matthew. I can't accept this, because what you're doing here is you're entwining peace with the political process. And what that actually does is that would give a veto to people who would threaten violence. So let's separate peace from the process. We're all agreed that violence has no place in any democratic society. So let's set that aside. Let's not reward peace with a political process. And to outline it for you, the Northern Ireland Act 1998, which is the enabling legislation for the Belfast Agreement, outlines only one ending. And that ending is a vote on the United Ireland, and a vote every 7 years thereafter until such
time.
The answer is yes. That is it. There's no mechanism.
Okay, well, let's let Matthew respond.
Northern Ireland to come back into the United Kingdom.
No, the agreement does not require a referendum. It only requires a referendum, a plebiscite, if it appears that a clear majority of people want that to happen. And I don't see why they should be.
Yes. What do they measure that on, Matthew? How would they decide? Is that done on opinion polls?
I would have thought it would be, and I would have thought that you would have to have persistent, consistent opinion polling showing a very clear majority for reunification over quite a long period before you could say that that clause
okay.
has been satisfied.
And Jamie Bryson, you know there will be others that will say, what are you afraid of? Are you afraid of a referendum on a United Ireland and what the outcome might be?
Well, as Matthew touched on himself, I'm opposed to the Belfast Agreement. I'm opposed to the process it creates, and I've argued for a long time that so for as long as unionism remains trapped within the structures of this process, unionism will always be on the back foot, because by its very nature, we as unionists are an impediment to the ultimate objective of the process, which, as I've already outlined in the Northern Ireland Act, the only end envisaged by the process is Irish, is the United Ireland. That is the only ending envisaged, and once that happens, and it is to continually, once the question is put, and then put again every 7 years, once the answer, or if the answer is yes, that's it. That's
what do you think the answer would be?
Well, I think the answer would be no. I'm a unionist, but at the end of the day, what I am concerned about is the process is about conditioning people's mindsets. I referred to it last night in my article as process Stockholm Syndrome, where you can condition people's minds into this all-Ireland harmonisation, and you just do it little by little, called the nudge approach, and move people along until such point that people will accept almost anything. And I think I think any unionist should go and read Matthew's piece, because what Matthew's piece does, in my mind, is demonstrates the logical trajectory of the process. It demonstrates the conditioning of mind. I take Matthew's word that he's fine.
A conditioning of minds, Jamie Bryson,
yes,
but
yes,
do you not give people
yes,
enough credit
yes.
to come up with their own opinion, to you know, to soak up whatever information is out there and decide what they want?
Well, when you have 20 years of propaganda, which Matthew himself articulated, you know, he entwined peace with the process, the process was an absence of violence. So
okay.
20 years, hold on, let me finish this point. 20 years of telling people you have to accept this political process, this political agreement, because if you don't, you must be anti-peace. Then it's no surprise that people's minds become conditioned that we just have to go along with all this. And my argument to unionism always is, no, I'm sorry, we don't just have to go along with this political process, because you can be entirely committed to peace, as every sensible person should be, but be completely opposed to this process, which is designed to drive us out of the United Kingdom incrementally and wedge us in the United Ireland.
Can I just,
yes.
Before I go, just respond to one thing. I am not part of any processing, any conditioning of anybody's minds. I write my own columns. I tell the editor what I'm going to write about. The editor doesn't tell me. I don't talk to conservative politicians about these things, and I'm speaking entirely for myself. I'm definitely not part of any secret or hidden process to condition anybody's mind. I simply explained my own point of view.
But you're an individual. You're an influential, with respect, you're an influential individual who's writing in one of the most influential newspapers in the United Kingdom. So quite naturally, the views which you put across and the persuasive arguments that you put forward will have an impact. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, people could say the same about you, Jamie, and whenever they hear you say what you believe, you know that that's the influence in their opinion.
Well, but the difference is Matthew is saying he's not trying to influence anybody's opinion or persuade. I'm trying to influence opinion. When I write my articles, I set out to influence people's opinion.
But what's the difference, Jamie?
Well, because I say that Matthew's piece is trying to condition minds and persuade people, and act as a persuader for that is unity. Matthew says that, well, no, that's not what he's doing, and it's all very innocent. You know, whenever I write an article, it's not all very innocent. I'm trying to persuade people of my political
I'm quite open about that. I'm open. I make an argument, and I want to persuade people of the argument. What I resisted was the implication that I was part of some plan or movement, which I'm not.
So there you go, Jamie. If you're all trying to influence people to come round to your way of thinking, then what is the difference in the message you're sending and the one, for example, Matthew is?
Well, because the point that I have just made, exactly, and if Matthew's been open enough, and he appears to be now, where he says he is trying to persuade people by his arguments, then what precisely is he trying to persuade people of in his articles? We haven't drilled down in that.
But if you write an opinion piece, whether it's on your own blog or in a national paper, you're sharing your opinion and you're trying to tell people, this is how I feel, and maybe, you know, through your own thinking, trying to change how they feel.
Let's deal with that, and that's logically what got through, because I don't think we've drilled down in that. So what actually is Matthew trying to persuade people off? Is he being a persuader for United Ireland? Is that what he's doing?
Yes, to a degree. Yes. My opinion is that United Ireland would make a lot of sense, but I'm very clear that it's not for me to decide that. It would be for the people of Northern Ireland, and unless they do, it won't happen. It's quite simple.
Okay, no, Matthew Paris, I know you have to go, so thank you very much for your time. Jamie, if you can stay with us for a little bit longer, 030 30 80 55 55, first call of the day. Brian, good morning to you.
Good morning. All this talk about persuading people and influencing people, at the end of the day, the people of Ireland as a whole will decide what's going to happen. It may take 5-10 years, may take longer, but once people get the full facts of an all Ireland, at the end of the day, people will vote either way.
And do you think people are getting the full facts, Brian? Do they understand?
They are. They know certain facts, but the economy, hospitals, the health, environment, everything to do with about moving to an all-Ireland. When people get the full facts, when they have different discussions all around Ireland, that may take, say, it may take 5-10 years, it may take that long, but that's what it's going to take, no matter what Jimmy Brayson says. And he can persuade nobody. He should be persuading the people on his side to stop their violence, stop their drug taking. That's what he should be doing.
Well, Jimmy, you want to respond to that?
Well, not particularly, because every time I'm on, we get down to Anderson's town on, who makes the same monotonous point. I'll just make one point to him. Actually, the people of Ireland won't decide, because it's a referendum north and south, so the people of Northern Ireland have a veto, so the people of Ireland won't decide. You're wrong with that.
But there will be no veto when the time comes.
Okay, Brian, thank you. Daniel, next. Good morning, Daniel. Just be careful. I don't know if I misheard that, but just let's watch our language this morning. We are live, and especially if kids are listening.
And I would just like to make 2 points. First of all, the first point is to Jamie, right? This isn't an attack on Jamie, because he has a right to come on and get...
And we asked Jamie on.
He represents. Yeah, he's right. The man's right. And you have to listen to what he has to say. But I'll say this much, Jamie. See, when people in your community, the Protestant loyalist community, were under siege from the Irish government or from the IRA, this is what you believed, right? Then, when the peace process came about, you now have a new siege mentality, which is against your own government. So how can you justify that? That can't be justified. You're dividing your own community against itself. And secondly, I would like to say this, right?
Yeah.
See, if they do bring in a referendum here, a border poll, in 5-10 years, you have to understand, the last referendum in the south of Ireland, see, before they went to the polls, the government's made it clear exactly what the people were voting for and what the circumstances were going to be after the result, okay? And then when they've done the Brexit referendum, sat for 3 years afterwards before it was cleared, because people weren't sure afterwards about what they actually voted for. So the British government isn't going to make that mistake again. The British government will set the terms of the border poll of what the question is going to be. There's going to be terms attached, and they're going to make it clear to people. And see, if you vote to stay in the UK, now they've done it there with that Belfast deal, or just that new decade deal was done last week. They made it clear to people that if you agree to go in the government again, there isn't that much more money to give you. And you're going to have to make changes. You're going to have to start taxing people in different ways. And they're going to do it. They're going to tell people in Northern Ireland, see if you vote to stay in the UK. And the Protestant Catholic people are going to have to understand this, is that they're going to say to them, there's no more £14 billion being handed over here. you're going to have to start bringing in taxes like we do in the UK. There's going to be privatisation of certain companies, and then there's also going to be water rates brought in. And then see when people go to the polls, see when they know that, you're going to have more people voting for a United Ireland than there are to stay in the UK. And that's the way the British will handle it. That's your government, Jimmy. That's what you support. And it doesn't matter who the Prime Minister is or who the party is going to be in power. That's the terms they're going to set. They're going to give people prior warning, but they're going to be voting for. And you're going to see a lot of people who will start voting for United Ireland.
Daniel, thank you. Gary next. Good morning, Gary.
How are you?
Not too bad, Gary. Go ahead.
Manny, like a lot of people, I'm really getting fed up with the argument, you know, the green and orange thing, you know, and listening to this conversation this morning, nothing seems to get any better. But I was wondering, I think England really want to get shot of Northern Ireland because it's costing them a fortune.
Why do you think that?
Because every time that we are short of anything, we'll have to go over to the British government to make up this and make up that.
Yeah, but it comes back to that argument about being self-sufficient. Do you believe that we should be self-sufficient here in Northern Ireland? Is that possible? And given the history of Northern Ireland, how it came to be, is that something that we should be expected to do here?
If we could shelve the orange and green, we could do it on one condition. And I said before, England, I think, don't want us. The South can't afford us. But if we sort of could go independent under the Commonwealth, I think it can't be any worse than it is at the minute, to be honest. Because every time that there's a crisis, it boils down to one thing, money. Now, they're talking about these spads and things like that. There's one thing they haven't mentioned. What is going to happen to their expenses? They're going to give them £85,000 a year, and then the next thing, they could maybe take another £50,000 or £60,000 in expenses. You know, they don't seem to look at the whole picture. All they can see, as I said before...
We're going to talk about SPADs later on in the programme. I'm not sure in terms of expenses. I don't think SPADs get expenses, but they have said that the salary will be capped at £85,000 a year. You hear what Matthew said there. You know, part of his argument is that it costs taxpayers more to keep Northern Ireland in the Union than they will get back from leaving the EU. So the money
That's exactly my point.
Yeah.
And if England could do it in the morning, or Britain, or whatever way you want to put it, I mean, the main thing about I'm retired now. I'm over 80, and I have been about a wee bit. And in England, any time they say, "Oh, Northern Ireland, we can't be bothered with them," you know, and that's a fact. Most English people look at it like that because they think that we're holding out the bag and bowl all the time. And quite honestly, it really does look like that. But anyway, the whole thing is, I'm holding up the line here, as all people wander on.
Yes, Jim Wilson's waiting.
I think that's the way it could work, and it can't be any worse than what we have now. And you see, another last point, if this lot of MLAs don't agree this time and go out, cut their money totally, and they'll not stay out long.
Okay.
All the best. Have a nice
Gary, day. Thank you. Good morning to you. Jim Wilson, good morning to you.
Morning.
Go ahead. What do you think when you hear Matthew talk this morning? What do you think?
No, I wanted to ask Matthew a question. I wanted him to ask him how does he evaluate the sacrifice that this country has given to the United Kingdom and made Britain great over the years of our troops that went to war and every conflict that's happened within the United Kingdom. How does he evaluate that against money? And the second question to him would have been, in 10 or 15 or 20 years' time, if Liverpool or Manchester or Newcastle are not pulling their weight and the money's not coming in from that section of north of England, do they decide to split England? Is it all about money? Because what he's coming about to me is it's a financial burden. Obviously, you know, Scotland's a financial burden.
Yeah, but splitting England that's not a like for like discussion, is that in terms of Northern Ireland?
Is it not?
It's part of the United Kingdom, part of Great Britain. Funny, I wanted to ask the man the question.
Yeah.
To answer me how he evaluated all those things when he was making up his article. You know, and the point about it is it's very, very easy to sit and write something without thinking about the history and the past and the future.
Yeah.
Because if you're going to dump us because we're a financial burden...
He did say, Jim Wilson...
And you know yourself that most of the money in England is made in the southern part of England. So we're going to divide England next.
Well, he did say meshing North and South together would be painful. He's accepted, and he said himself that it would be economically difficult at the start. To be fair to Matthew Parris, he told us he had 15 minutes, and he stayed until about 25 past there.
He also has to realise that Matthew doesn't realise that Ireland were an economic disaster, worse than the other parts of Europe, and only whenever the European Union started to put money left, right and centre into Ireland, Ireland started to become financially viable. Now that Ireland has to start putting money into the EU, it'll be very interesting to see how their economy develops in the next 10 or 20 years. I hope it develops well.
Okay.
But the point about